If you've gone to the grocery store lately, you've probably noticed some items are missing. Big chains like Kroger's and Costco report that sales of staples, including rice, beans, even oat milk, have shot up over 40% in the last few weeks. Hot dog sales are up over 300%. Part of that is about increased demand, but there is also a growing supply problem. A Tyson meatpacking plant in Iowa just had to shut down after almost 200 employees tested positive for COVID-19. Let's get a look at the food supply chain now with Shubh Debgupta, an economist and founder and CEO of the company Mesh Intelligence. Shubh, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So as we go to the supermarkets and notice that a lot of things are missing from the shelves, everything from, you know, flour to frozen fruits to, of course, toilet paper, is the United States running out of food?
No, the United States is not running out of food in the production of it. There's enough food in the ground and enough food in our storage. The issue really is how do you get that food from those places to the consumer? So essentially the transportation and the delivery of it.
Are those places in the United States, or are you talking about food coming in from other countries and there are problems getting it out of those countries and into the United States?
So a little bit of both, but 80% of food that consumers eat and consume every day is coming from the United States. So the supply chain within the United States is important. And about 20% of the food comes from abroad, but with some categories being significantly higher. So seafood, for example, is between 80 and 90% of our seafood comes from abroad. So we see supply chain disruptions in both the U.S. as well as globally as well.
Well, give me an example of a supply chain disruption in the United States. What's the problem?
So, for example, milk producers, for example, in Wisconsin and Vermont have really been facing a shortage of demand, or they have excess supply, and they've had to throw away between 5 and 7% of their weekly take. A lot of that is due to the reduction in purchasing by school districts, which are big consumers of milk and dairy products, as well as restaurants. That's a mismatch there. Additionally, we're also seeing farmers, agricultural landowners, where they may have produce right now, which is ripe for harvesting, unable to harvest it for either there's not enough people or the people are sick or social distancing reduces productivity, and that could lead to waste. Recently, there was an article about a large farm producer of green beans and cabbage in Florida who's decided to leave their produce in the ground, so essentially turning it into mulch. About 5 to 6 million pounds of cabbage and green beans will just turn to mulch because their previous buyers were restaurant industry, and those folks are no longer there or not demanding at the same level, and they're not able to move that supply to where people want it, so back to consumers in their homes.
Why is it so difficult, though, to make that adjustment and say, okay, the restaurants aren't open, the schools aren't open, but people still maybe want this stuff? Why can't they just say, now let's get it to the supermarkets or let's get it to some kind of market instead so that people can still buy this food?
Right. So think of it as two independent chains, the food supply chain for food consumed at home, which is essentially half where half the food is consumed. And then the other supply chain, which is for food consumed away from home, which is food service, restaurants, schools, what have you. And they have been pretty much run independently, and they have their own producers, they keep it captive. And one of the biggest challenges, I think, preventing a quick and easy transition, just to say, okay, now I don't have a buyer in the restaurant, I can go to somebody at home, is restrictions. So food is packaged very differently for restaurants versus packaging and labeling for food consumption at home. And what's interesting is in the last few weeks, some states have taken up on themselves to address that. So Michigan put out a rule allowing restaurants to repackage and relabel products that they could then sell to consumers directly. So we see some effort on that front. More is needed for sure. And coming out of this, I think one of the lasting steps would be more connective tissue between these two supply chains.
You know, there's another issue as well, which is that, let's say, in a plant where food is processed, people get sick and then they have to shut it down. And we just saw that happen in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where a pork plant that produces 5% of the country's pork was forced to close after 300 of its employees tested positive for COVID-19. How much of that has been a problem so far? Do you expect to be a problem as this epidemic continues?
Oh, labor and the issues associated with illness, social distancing is going to be a problem because food is a very labor-intensive industry, all the way from production in farms or processing, transportation, and even retail, right, in grocery stores. And we there are stories all along the supply chain as employees fall sick, and that's definitely going to affect our supply chain.
And is it going to make prices go up very quickly in the grocery stores?
Yes. So we will see fluctuations in pricing, again, primarily for perishables or products that move pretty quickly from production to consumption. And we've seen that. We see that happening already. So you see egg prices. Wholesale egg prices have essentially tripled in the last few months, all the way from roughly a dollar at the beginning of the year to about $3 recently. A lot of that pricing hasn't translated directly back to the consumer because grocery stores sometimes absorb some of the price increases, but that's there. It's just there's a huge amount of demand for eggs, but also the supply is pretty tight.
I was seeing, though, on the other hand, that cruise ships apparently consume a lot of avocados or use a lot of avocados, and now that they're not doing that, that there's a glut of avocados on the market.
That's right. So yeah, so it's interesting to see. So that's an excess supply that'll go away in a few weeks, right? And then if those supplies are not moved to consumers, a lot of people will lose a lot of their produce there.
You mentioned the international component. I want to go back to that. The countries that are shutting down exports to other countries, for example, Russia is no longer exporting wheat. What do you expect to see happen when it comes to countries around the world trying to hoard their own food that they need for their population and how that will affect us here in the United States?
That is a challenge that we would have to address pretty head on, and I think globally as well, because as protectionism sets in, and this could unravel very quickly. This is something that countries are keeping an eye on. The UN's food FAO is keeping an eye on. And if protectionism increases, we will see severe stock disruptions to our food system.
What would you say is the single biggest thing that is going to change long term as a result of this interruption to our normal food supply?
The first one and the biggest one to answer your question, I think, is how consumers get their food. We will see a sustained adoption of food delivery directly into people's homes. Just an analogy here, the SARS epidemic or SARS outbreak and the H1N1 outbreak in China across the last 15, 20 years was credited with actually the widespread adoption of e-commerce in that country. So what we think is, in a similar way, one likely outcome is food delivery or the e-commerce of food or fresh food into people's home would be a sustained new buying behavior that we think will persist. So that's one big one. The second one is something that we that I shared a little earlier, is probably more connective tissue between the food supply chain for restaurants and food service. And the third one, I think, is more sustained is in contingency planning. So a lot of the food companies were caught flat-footed with the COVID-19 virus outbreak. So thinking ahead, thinking through these scenarios and being able to actually establish alternative channels, contingency plans, when and should such events happen, that it seemed like they're happening more frequently, would allow consumers to sleep well at night and companies' executives to feel better about the process.
What grade would you give our food supply chain right now?
So our food supply chain is a very resilient food supply chain. It's interconnected, it is complicated, but it is resilient. The issues that we are seeing is pieces of it is shutting down, and or I wouldn't say shutting down, is getting disrupted, which is causing it to get back up. I think our food supply chain is a B+, A- right now. But if things persist, that grade will go down.
That is Shubh Debgupta, who is an economist, CEO, and founder of the company Mesh Intelligence, which focuses on the food supply chain. Shubh, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Jeremy.